Welcome to the football podcast. Nope, that's not it. Welcome to the football project. My name is Lucas Abreu. I'm here with Vivek Barnwal. How you doing, Vivek?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well. Today we're talking about defensive positions. We're breaking those down. As a reminder as to how we're doing this, we got the name of the position, what the roles are, some key traits that distinguish them from other positions, and then we'll be talking about a current NFL player who's an elite example of that position. Again, this is just meant to be basic. Even if you watched for years, we hope that you find something that's helpful or interesting about this. So let's start with the defensive line. Vake, I'll pass it off to you.
So the defensive line, their main job is to get past the offensive line and disrupt the quarterback or disrupt the ball carrier. We'll start with the defensive tackles. They're positioned towards the middle of the defensive line. And typically, they're the heaviest people on defense, like easily over 300 pounds. There's a few that are less than that, but majority tend to be bigger. In previous eras of NFL football, their goal was to occupy gaps and occupy blockers. They still do that to some extent, but now a lot more defensive tackles are being asked to get upfield into the backfield to blow things up. There's a lot of different traits we can go into. I just try to boil it down to like their goal is to reset the line of scrimmage.
What does resetting the line of scrimmage mean?
Yeah, so the line of scrimmage is this like imaginary line from sideline to sideline from where the ball is at. Sometimes if you're watching on TV, it'll be like a blue line that runs across the field and that helps you see where the line of scrimmage is at. And so the more the D line can push the offensive line back off of that imaginary line, the more that's going to cause chaos for the run game and chaos for the quarterback. So it's the O line's job to protect that line and try to move the defensive line off that line of scrimmage. And it's the defensive line's job to penetrate that line and try to get to the quarterback or the ball carrier.
When you said occupy gaps and blockers, I thought of Vince Wilfork,
yes.
Just maybe the biggest human to ever put on an NFL jersey. But who right now stands out to you as a defensive tackle who kind of has embraced the new roles and responsibilities of the game?
Yeah. Before he retired, I would have said Aaron Donald. He is probably the greatest defensive tackle of all time.
Yeah.
But a current NFL player is Chris Jones, and he just got paid. Like he is the highest paid defensive tackle. He has elite quickness, elite power, elite hands. Something unique about him is his endurance. Like he plays more snaps than most defensive tackles in the NFL. So not only is he a large human being, but he is in great shape. But he's not as big as some of the other defensive tackles in the game. And because of that, Kansas City moves him all over the line. So sometimes he's in the middle. Sometimes they move him even to the outside because he's such a good pass rusher. And if you want to see how big of an impact he can have on a game, look no further than the past few Super Bowls that he's played in. So there have been multiple plays during the past couple of years in the Super Bowl that Kansas City has won that he has wrecked the play. Like it looks like the offense has a great shot for a big play. Like the quarterback can throw it downfield, a guy's running wide open, or, oh man, the running back's just about to bust outside the tackle and take it for potentially a big gain. And Chris comes out of nowhere and makes a huge hit or a huge tackle. Defensive tackles aren't typically considered clutch, but Chris Jones is just different. And you've seen that in most games he's played in, but especially in the Super Bowl the past couple of years. So next to the defensive tackles, we have the defensive ends. They are on the outside and their main goal is to rush the passer and contain run plays from getting outside. Typically, they're the highest valued position on a defense because they most directly impact the quarterback by getting a pass rush on the quarterback. So key skills they need to usually have a vast toolbox of pass rush moves, whether that's a bull rush where it's like you're just trying to plow through the guy in front of you, or a swim move or a spin move, a rip and tuck. Those are all just different terms to try and get around the tackle. And they got to be bendy. And what I mean by that is, the first episode where we talked about offensive positions, remember how we talked about offensive tackles being really big, really long, really tall?
Yeah.
So it's tough to go through guys who are like 330, 350 pounds. And it takes a long time to get around someone who's that long. And so one of the best ways to do that is to be really flexible and strong and bendy to where it's like you can take pretty much like a straight shot with just a slight angle and kind of contort your body to be able to get around the blocker, get under their like long reach and affect the quarterback. It's a skill that most other positions on defense don't require as much as a defensive end does. And then beyond that, they got to set the edge as well too if it's a run play.
Okay, so what does, I hear that often, but what does setting the edge mean exactly for a defensive end?
It basically means keeping the ball carrier, whether it's a running back or a quarterback, from getting outside of the offensive tackle. Once a quarterback or a running back gets outside the tackle, there's a lot more space to run. And if you have someone who's setting the edge and making it difficult for them to do so, at the very least, you're buying time for the rest of the defense to rally to the ball carrier and get there. But you can also try and force the ball carrier to have to go back inside. And that's where you have a lot more help on a defense. You have a lot more players towards the middle of the field rather than the outside of the field. If a running back or a quarterback gets to the outside of the tackle, there's maybe a linebacker who's able to help over the top or maybe a corner, but there's not as much help. So that's what setting the edge means.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And a defensive end that I would consider elite is Myles Garrett. So this past year in the NFL, he was the defensive player of the year. He's 6'4", 270, but he plays stronger than that, if you can imagine. And he moves much quicker than a person who's 6'4", 270. When I said bendy, he's kind of like Gumby if Gumby was 6'4", 270. Like, and he's been double teamed more than any other defender in the past couple of years. And a double team is just basically when there's two people who are assigned to block one individual on defense. So a great example of that, there's a game last year, the Browns were playing the Tennessee Titans. And it's pretty common to see, you know, like an offense use pre-snap motion to move a wide receiver to one side or a tight end to another to one side. And so Tennessee moved a tight end to the left side where Miles was at. And so now they had two tight ends over there and both of them were going to block Miles. And Miles is a pretty unique player. He has a lot of freedom in the Browns defense to where he can move around the field a little bit more than maybe some other players. And so he saw both those guys lined up over him. And he just was like, you know, I'm actually going to bump over to the other side of the formation. So he jogged to the other side of the formation and the two tight ends just kind of looked at each other and they're like, we're supposed to block him. So let's follow him. So they both go and follow Miles to the other side of the formation. And Miles, he's not just a really athletic player. He's a really smart player too. And so he realized like, hey, these two guys are trying to follow me and block me. And if they don't get set, the Titans can't snap the ball. So as the Titans, like these two tight ends are trying to follow Miles to the other side, Miles stops. And then he goes back to the other side of the formation. And then the two tight ends stop and they try and follow him over there. And Miles just keeps going back and forth until the play clock's about to run out and the Titans have to use a timeout, which I'd never seen anything like that happen in an NFL game before. And I think it just speaks to how much opposing offenses respect Myles Garrett as a defensive end.
Yeah, no, that's insane. I've also never seen that. So kind of like talk to me about the difference between Miles moving back and forth and what the roles are specifically of a linebacker. Because I know that there are similarities, but do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So Miles is mainly moving around like that when it's clear, very clearly going to be a pass play. So he has a lot more freedom to stand up and move to different sides of the formation or even stand up and be off the ball. And that's typically what a lot of linebackers might do. So linebacker, you know, it's actually kind of a tricky position to overview because there's so many different kinds of linebackers that are used in certain kinds of defenses. So I'm going to just try and categorize it into three like broad areas of where linebackers line up on a defense. So one, linebackers can line up towards the middle of the offensive formation behind the defensive line. And that position is typically referred to as middle linebacker or inside linebacker. They have some specific names like Mike linebacker or Jack linebacker. There's a second category of linebackers who line up towards the outside of the offensive formation and behind the defensive line. And they're often referred to as outside linebackers. If they're towards the strong side of the formation, they're sometimes referred to as the Sam or the Star. If they're on the weak side of the formation, weak and strong just means a designation of like where there's more offensive players lined up. So there might be more on one side of the formation than the other. And so the strong side is more players there, weak side is fewer players there. And the weak side linebacker is sometimes referred to as the will. Then you have off ball outside linebackers. And then you have like on ball outside linebackers. So on ball outside linebackers, they play more like a defensive end. So they're closer to the line of scrimmage. They're on the outside of the formation, but they occasionally drop back into coverage. So they're called an outside linebacker, but some other terms are rush linebacker, Leo, Buck, Viper. There's all sorts of different terminology that different teams will use to designate their linebacker names. And if a defense has off-ball linebackers, you typically see two on the field together. If an offense has more running backs and tight ends on the field, the defense will have more linebackers on the field to match up with them. And if the offense has more wide receivers on the field, then typically there's going to be fewer linebackers because linebackers don't usually cover wide receivers so well. We were talking last episode about how wide receivers tend to be a lot faster, a lot quicker. Most linebackers don't have that same quickness or speed to match up with receivers. So some key traits for linebackers, they got to have high football IQ and great instincts to read and react. So last episode, if you remember, how we talked about we can watch the center and quickly determine whether it's a run or pass based on that first step a center takes. And that's one way to read an offensive line. That's exactly the kind of stuff that linebackers are having to quickly read and react to in order to figure out if they should drop back in coverage or come up and stop the run.
Okay.
They got to have agility to move quickly from side to side. They got to have active hands to get blockers off of them and to make a tackle. Pass coverage, a lot of that tends to be like a tough skill for a lot of linebackers in the NFL. You know, there's a lot of really good college linebackers who are great against the run and maybe even like are able to play the pass decently well in college. But I feel like the NFL is like a whole nother level where a good college linebacker can really struggle in the NFL because coverage is just so much harder.
And so who do you think right now is a linebacker who kind of highlights all of these different things and key traits?
One linebacker in particular would be Fred Warner as an off-ball linebacker. So great against the run, great in coverage. You can tell he studies a lot of film. He just always seems to be in the right position. And a great example of that, last year, the 49ers, he plays for the San Francisco 49ers. They played against the Dallas Cowboys. During that game, there's this play where Fred sniffed out a misdirection run play, like read it perfectly, stopped it for no gain. And then soon after that play, pretty sure it was on the same drive, he looks like he's going to rush the quarterback, like he's going to blitz the quarterback from between the center and the guard. And right at the snap of the ball, he turns and he bails and he busts his butt back in coverage. And he ends up guarding CeeDee Lamb. And for those of you listening who don't know who CeeDee Lamb is, he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And so they see Fred trying to guard CeeDee and they throw it up to CeeDee Lamb. And Fred Warner runs step for step with CeeDee, tracks the ball, breaks up the pass. Like, it was incredible because linebackers aren't supposed to be able to cover wide receivers like that, let alone one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, by the end of that game, Fred led the team in tackles, had a sack, had an interception, had multiple pass breakups. That game was like a perfect example of how Fred Warner is truly like a do-it-all linebacker.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if he's an elite off-ball linebacker, who would you say is like an elite on-ball linebacker?
Yeah, it's hard to pick anyone else instead of TJ Watt. So TJ Watt has two brothers who played in the NFL. One of them, JJ Watt, is a future Hall of Famer, and I think TJ is going to be a Hall of Famer as well, easily by the time he retires. So he's a former Defensive Player of the Year, but he's been a finalist for that year four other times, which is ridiculous. He has the NFL record for most sacks in a season. He had 22 and a half sacks in one season. All the things we talked about, he's bendy. He's really active with his hands. He has a relentless motor. Like, there's been multiple plays where it looks like he's being blocked, or he might even get like put down on his back, and he gets up and he just gets after the quarterback or comes back and makes a tackle. But he also drops back in coverage fairly often. And so it's kind of wild to think like, man, if TJ Watt had even more opportunities to rush the passer, I imagine he'd break the sack record he already set in the NFL. So it's pretty wild to see how he can affect the quarterback with the way he rushes.
Before we move into the secondary, you said you know, if TJ had more opportunities to rush the passer. I'm really curious, what's the difference between a rush, a pressure, and a blitz?
Yeah, that's a great question. Different defenses might define them a little bit differently. When I was at Ohio State, I learned some really helpful ways to like view that from a defensive perspective. So defenses typically send four players to try and get after the quarterback. There's an occasional time where they might just send three. You know, there's 11 players on defense. If you're sending three to get after the quarterback, that means you have eight who are back in coverage, which is great for coverage, but it's hard to affect the quarterback with just three rushers. Four is kind of like the typical or the sweet spot for most defenses. If you send one more than four, so if you send five, that's what we typically call it a pressure. So defenses are sending pressure when they send five players to try and affect the quarterback or try and attack the quarterback. And if the defense sent six or more defenders after the quarterback, that's what we called a blitz. So a rush was four, pressure was five, and a blitz was six or more. So the more you send after the quarterback, the quicker you're going to affect him, but the less you have to cover, like the less people you have in coverage. So if you send a pressure or a blitz, you got to get to the quarterback. That's what like we'd call on defense. Like you got to get home. You got to make the quarterback throw it away, or you got to get the quarterback down.
Yeah.
Did that help at all?
Oh, tremendously. Yeah. Cause I don't know. I just figured like, depending on what position you played. I wasn't sure. And so this is super great because now I know.
That's awesome.
I literally had no idea.
It's cool because like, you know, when I'm watching from home and I can determine if it's a run or pass from watching the center. If I know it's a pass, one of the things I'd love to look at next is how many defenders are coming after the quarterback if it's a pass.
Yeah.
So if it's a pass, I try to look, get my eyes to the defense and see who's coming. You know, it's typically the defensive lineman like we talked about, but then you can also notice like, oh, that looks like a linebacker coming in. Oh, if it's a linebacker, are they sending pressure? Are they sending a blitz? Like you can kind of pick that up pretty quickly the more you get practice doing that. So
yeah,
that's something I enjoy getting to watch from home.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So going, I thought you were going to transition us to the next one, but I can.
You got it. I trust
moving
you.
Moving on to the cornerbacks then. Well, this is called the secondary. Secondary is basically the people who are mainly responsible for coverage, typically. So you have your cornerbacks and your safety. Cornerback is the main role. Their main role is to prevent receivers from catching passes. So sometimes they guard a specific receiver. That's man-to-man. Sometimes they guard a specific area or zone. That's called zone coverage. And sometimes they play this hybrid of both man and zone. It's kind of referred to as a matchup zone. That's typically like the toughest to discern when you're just watching from home.
What is a matchup zone then?
Yeah, quite honestly, I feel like in the NFL level two, there's a lot more matchup zone that's being played. So a matchup zone is typically defenders who are taking drops back into like a certain area of the field, but they adjust their drop in relation to the wide receiver who's running their route. So they're not just dropping into a space, but they're dropping in a way that gets closer towards whoever the route runner is and kind of turns into like, oh, you end up having that route runner man to man, but you're still keeping your eyes back on the quarterback. So it's typically a coverage that's played when a defense is bringing pressure or a blitz, because it gives you the opportunity to see when the ball is coming out of the quarterback's hands while also being closer vicinity to like whoever the route runner is or the receiver or the tight end or whoever it might be. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of communication with others on defense. And honestly, it's a bit of a gamble when you're sending pressure because it's tough to kind of get a feel for it. But some of the best defenses in the NFL play a lot of matchup zone. Hopefully that's helpful in terms of going over some matchup zone stuff. And a future episode, would love to break down different coverages sometime, like what they're called, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. But for today, that's probably enough. In terms of like going back to cornerback then, there's typically two to three on a field at a given time. Depends on how many wide receivers are on the field. So the more wide receivers that are on the field, the more likely it is that the offense is going to throw. And so to counteract that, defenses tend to put more cornerbacks on the field if there's more wide receivers. So similar to receivers, we talked about how, hey, like speed is important, but it's not everything. And it's the same thing for cornerbacks. Like, speed is important, but if you're just really fast and that's the only trait you have, you're going to really struggle in coverage. I think there's a lot of really fast corners that lack some of these other traits, and it ends up being really hard for them to find a consistent position on the field. So you got to have great eye discipline. What I mean by that is, if you're playing man, keeping your eyes locked on the receiver's hips, keeping your eyes locked on like whatever the receiver's tells might be, you personally as a corner need to have really quick hips. You have to be able to turn and run. You have to have amazing hand-eye coordination. One of the toughest things, I feel like maybe memorizing the plays at corner probably is not as hard as it is for other positions on the field. But what's being asked of corners is, I think, one of the toughest things from an athletic standpoint. And corner was what I played in high school. It's what I'd coached for most of my coaching career. And it's so hard to not panic when the ball's in the air going to your guy, and to maintain your technique, maintain your discipline. And I think that's what separates a lot of the elite cornerbacks from the decent or the good quarterbacks. And I think a current elite cornerback is Sauce Gardner. He plays for the New York Jets. He has all the traits that we just talked about. And it's so cool because opposing offenses and quarterbacks all know that about him. So a stat that I think really reveals that is, this past year in the NFL, he was targeted less than any other starting cornerback in the NFL. Targeted means like the opposing quarterback threw the ball his direction. So Sauce Gardner played over 1,000 snaps this past season. Quarterbacks only threw to the person he was guarding 53 times.
Wow.
Which is a ridiculously low amount. It speaks to how opposing quarterbacks and offenses respect Sauce Gardner and how well he plays. And even when they threw it his way, they only caught it 30 times. So he played over 1,000 snaps. The guy he was guarding caught it 30 times, which means he allowed the guy he was guarding to catch less than 2 passes a game, which is absurdly low.
Yeah, that's terrible. If I had a receiver on my fantasy team with 2 catches, I'd be livid.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a great perspective to put it in. So that's a snapshot on corner. Safeties are the other counterpart in the secondary. Sometimes they're broken up into free safety and strong safety. Free safety being like they play a little bit further back. They're responsible for more coverage things. Strong safeties tend to play closer to the line of scrimmage or kind of play more like a linebacker. But honestly, in today's NFL, it's not as clean of a distinction as that. Yeah, there's certain safeties that are better against the run or better against the pass. But if you have 2 or 3 safeties on the field, you're asking each of them to take a pretty heavy burden in terms of being able to stop the run and the pass. And I think the elite ones can do it all well. So typically there's 2 on the field. Sometimes there's 3. Again, it depends on how many receivers or tight ends are on the field just to match those things up. When I'm watching from home and I'm trying to figure out what kind of defense the team is running, safeties are the key for me being able to discern what coverage is being played. Corners, sometimes they like, you know, they can get kind of cute and like they can like get up to close to the line and then they drop back. Like, corners kind of lie to you in terms of what coverage they're playing pre-snap. It's hard to be a safety and lie to you about what coverage you're playing pre-snap because the quarterbacks at the NFL level are just so good. And if you're out of position, a quarterback's going to make you pay for that. So safeties usually have to be right around where they're going to end up playing coverage-wise. Only a few safeties are able to really roam the field and disguise their coverages super well. So safeties are the key to figuring out what coverage a defense is playing. Key skills that they need, they got to have versatility to do a little bit of everything. So we said that about tight ends on offense. Safeties are kind of like the counterpart of that on defense. And one of the safeties that I think does it all really well is Antoine Winfield Jr. So he's the son of a Hall of Fame defensive back, but oddly enough, he wasn't recruited highly coming out of high school. I saw like some recruiting profiles on him and they had him listed as like a 2-star prospect out of 5. So 2 out of 5 is not considered to be like an elite prospect by any means. But he got an offer to play Division I, and he had an amazing college career. But then, same thing, he didn't get drafted until later than some of the other safeties in that draft class. And a big reason for that was he's not that tall. Like, he's shorter compared to other safeties that play the game. But so far in his NFL career, he's been absolutely fantastic. He is the only player in NFL history to have over 100 tackles, 5 sacks, 10 pass breakups, 5 forced fumbles, 3 picks, and 3 fumble recoveries in a season. And if you don't know what all those stats mean, that's okay. It just means he's really good at football and he does a lot of different things that impact the game positively for his team. And I think a lot of teams that passed on drafting him really regret it now. Like the measurables of a person doesn't tell the whole story on how good of a football player they are. So that does it for the defense. Hopefully there's, you know, some little nuggets in there that are helpful for you in terms of learning the game. And if you've been watching for a long time, and if this was kind of a crash course for you, we hope that it was helpful and would love to continue connecting with you about it. If you have any questions about anything we've shared over the past few episodes, please reach out to us. Lucas, why don't you tell them how folks can do that if they want to get a hold of us?
Yeah, so you can email us at thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Instagram at thefootballprojectpod. Give us a follow, and we'll be posting more there. I don't know if that's entirely true. or our Twitter at TFP_podcast_. But yeah, I think that's it right now. I think that's all. This was awesome. Thanks for doing this, Vake.
Yeah, man. Thank you for doing this. Yeah. Hope y'all have a great week. And well, I shouldn't be saying y'all. I don't know. We're really bad at ending this.
Yeah. I think let's just, it's done.
Cool.